Welcome, friends, it's the Movie Boom Podcast. Movie Boom Podcast, enjoy the show. Jackie and Brian are talking about movies. Movie Boom Podcast on the radio.
Welcome to Movie Film. This is episode 135, brought to you by Mr. Boy Productions. My name is Zaki Hassan, and I am joined by my heroic sidekick, Brian Hall.
Hey, good to be here.
You know, normally, Brian, we are a dynamic duo, but this episode we're joined by a third, which makes us kind of a league, if you will. I'm talking about Aaron Neuwirth, who's our guest. He is the host of the Out Now with Aaron and Abe podcast. Aaron, thanks for joining us.
My man, happy to be here.
So this is, I feel like I am still way behind in having you on this show, considering how many times you've been gracious enough to have me join you as part of your posse on your weekly podcast. So thanks for coming on, and thanks for having me on the many times that you have.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I have a whiteboard behind me that has all these numbers for Zaki specifically. That's, you know, how many times you have you. So you owe me, you still owe me like seven other shows. But, you know, this will be fine for now.
But who's keeping count? Well, you are, obviously.
We'll I have a whiteboard. I said
you see your little marker squeak. So we got like one little check there for you.
There's a little goateed stick figure next to it, so I make sure I know which Zaki I'm talking about.
Goateed stick figure. That's what my wife calls me, actually. All right, so we are talking on Thursday night. This is November. What's today's date, actually?
The 16th.
Thank you. Yes.
It's 2021.
Thank you. So Justice League is in theaters. It is in theaters tonight. Like, that's the level of dedication we have on this show. We're like, the movie is in theaters tonight, and we, by gum, we will record tonight. In my
best. I was in a theater less than an hour ago. That's watching this, so yeah.
So you got out, Brian, you walked home and you logged in.
Yep.
So this is very cool. So I saw it 2 days ago. Aaron, when did you see it?
I saw it on Monday. So it's all sank in on different levels for us so far.
Well, that'll be kind of interesting, actually.
So obviously, we will do our brief non-spoiler take, but I mean, let's acknowledge the fact that this movie is finally here, because I feel like, certainly for you and me, Brian, I mean, we've spent several episodes worth of time talking about the making of Justice League, going all the way back to before Batman v Superman, because I was going through our archives and I was realizing that, like, way back in like 2012, we were like, hey, Ben Affleck might be directing Justice League, which is not a thing that happened. But it's been in the works forever. I mean, there was the George Miller version that was kicking around in like 2009
with Armie Hammer.
So Armie Hammer was signed on to be Batman.
Yep,
That's a world that almost happened.
and it was like, I think Scott Porter from Friday Night Lights was going to be Superman, and I don't remember some of the other. Jay Baruchel was going to be the villain.
And what? Well, Jay Baruchel?
That's real. He was going to be Maxwell Lord.
Okay. And all right. Okay.
I have a hard time seeing that, but that's a thing that almost happened, and it's funny how, like, after Mad Max Fury Road, it became a lot of like, I wish we'd gotten that instead. You know.
Well, I'm glad we got Mad Max, though. I will say,
this is true. Did we get Mad Max in lieu of Justice League?
I don't know.
It certainly worked out better that way.
Fair enough. Yeah, and I mean, the movie was canceled back in, it was like 2009 or 2010. It would have to have been like 2009, because I want to say it was before the writer's strike. So when was that?
That was 2008.
Okay.
That was 2008-2009.
Okay, so that sounds about right. So I think they killed it because of that, and you know, they weren't comfortable with whatever script they had.
You're right, Brian. It was, yeah, like 07, because like it affected everything that was coming out in 08 and 09. That's
right. Yeah.
That sounds about right. And no, you know, wait, hold on. It would have had to have been between Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises, because part of the reason they killed it was because Chris Nolan was not a happy camper about them doubling up on Batman.
Honestly, when it comes to the writer's strike, my main – the thing that comes to mind is Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, and I know that's a 2009 film, right. So it's – I know the strike was –
There you go.
It was, so it was 2007-8. Like, is it like
that? Okay, that's, okay, that sounds right. Yeah, yeah, and –
I just pulled up the George Miller Justice League. It has DJ Cortrona as Clark Kent in Superman.
Oh, okay. I'm wrong about that. Okay.
Armie Hammer, Megan Gale as Wonder Woman. Who's Megan Gale?
I don't know. Wow. Jeez.
She's in Fury Road. I know that. I see that. So Australian actress.
Are you on the Wikipedia page?
Yeah, I'm on the Wikipedia page.
Does it say when the movie was canceled?
I'm looking for that. Let's see. But in January 2008, Warner Brothers announced the film was on indefinite hold.
Okay, so the math checks out, basically.
Yeah.
You know what's funny is you think of Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, I think of Terminator Salvation.
Oh, I purposely don't think of that anymore, ever.
Yeah, I don't think Christian Bale thinks of that movie anymore either, yeah.
He thinks he was shouting about a different movie when people bring that up to him.
Yes.
He was just getting character for Chaney. That's what it was.
Right.
So the Justice League movie does not happen in 2008/2009. And then here we are nearly 10 years later, and it emerges as the, what is this now, the fifth DC Expanded Universe movie?
Yes. What's the first one? You know, first Green Lantern?
Green Lantern? Brian. Brian, this is very disappointing. Green Lantern is like the Earth 2 movie universe that never happened. See, it's funny, actually, because, Brian, I think you and I were talking about this before, and I was like, oh, Angela Bassett, she was going to be the recurring character. Angela Bassett plays Amanda Waller in Green Lantern, who is played by, what's her name, Viola Davis in Suicide Squad.
Academy Award winner, Viola. We have to say the whole thing now.
Yeah.
So they just, that movie just dropped down the memory hole completely, Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Well, I guess if we have a Flash now, that means we do have a multiverse, which means there is an Earth 2 where there is so the movie is canon in a different dimension. I guess that's best way to put it.
That's very true, and that would mean that all the TV shows and everything else are all canon somewhere.
Yes,
which I'm totally fine with. By the way, I think I like that as an idea, even if they never actually do anything.
Acknowledge
with that.
It.
I think it's cool.
I like to think this discussion of canon in my introduction to this podcast is making your fan the listeners be like, I don't know about this guy so far. Let's see if we're good.
Well, I think we've lost about 15 subscribers for every minute since we've started. So
yeah, because we haven't talked about anything about the actual movie yet. So yeah, like this isn't a Justice League podcast. It's just a bunch of guys riffing on George Miller's non Justice League movie.
Well, okay, so fair enough. So the movie is out, and obviously a lot of expectations. We do start with our non-spoiler take, and Aaron, you are our guest. So, where are you at with the DC Expanded Universe before seeing this movie, and talk about what you thought going in and coming out of Justice League?
That's a perfect setup question because, it feels weird that I need to have a kind of qualifier in order to talk about this movie.
Yeah.
By the fact that we're professional film critics, it's are you a fan? I guess is the kind of common thread now. And
yeah,
I don't know about you, but it feels like most critics are around our age as a general median, and probably grew up reading comic books and watching various forms of these superheroes, be them in cartoons or old reruns of classic TV series such as the '60s Batman show, which I'm a huge fan of. So to speak to the DC films currently. As a massive Batman fan, which I am, I've been mixed on the kind of the DCEU.
Right.
And obviously, it's not just Batman, but Man of Steel, I thought was okay. I feel like I was promised more than what I got out of it. Hmm. Batman v Superman, which was the next. Yeah. Okay. Is there some other one I'm missing?
Yeah, that was nice.
Superman is complicated. I think it's very ambitious, which is what I like about it. That in the visuals, I think the Larry Fong cinematography, honestly, I felt was Oscar worthy. I think it's a beautiful movie that looks like, as I've said many times, Alex Ross paintings come to life.
Hmm.
Sadly, that movie I felt was just overplotted, and just some of the motivations were way too off, and I almost wasn't going to watch it again, and I even saw Justice League, which I thought eliminated my chance to watch it again, because I'm like, oh, I saw it before, I thought I would.
Right.
But then I was like, well, now that I've seen Justice League, I kind of want to revisit this just to see again. And watching it again, it's like, I think I've watched it 3 times now total with the Ultimate Edition or whatever. That's so many hours of time in my life. I do think like the first half of BVS is like good enough where I'm like, I really wish the second half of this movie followed up on a lot of this interesting stuff here. But ultimately, yeah, I think it's, again, it's just kind of like, I hate going by rating, but it's like, it's a 3-star movie, but it has like 4-star ideas in it and whatnot. Suicide Squad is a disaster. That's a terrible movie. It was my worst movie of last year. I hated Suicide Squad. Really? I don't really want to talk. Yeah, no, it has no bearing on this movie whatsoever, so why even bring it back? that's all I have to say about it. Wonder Woman was a step in the right direction. I think it's very good. I think whatever flaws it may have are outdone by the fact that the general theme of the movie, you know, which is like very hopeful and optimistic, just works for me. I think it's a strong lead performance, and the kind of especially in a movie that's World War One, which is like the most depressing possible war. Yeah. They make that the film that's the most cheerful in the DCEU. That's impressive to me. And so despite some issues I have with it, it's kind of the feelings I get from it after watching it just, I think, continue to resonate well, especially in a year like this that we've been having. It's like, this is a positive thing that I could really enjoy. So that brings us to Justice League, and I'm sorry for boring your listeners with all those thoughts. Justice League is fun. I will say that much. It is a fun movie. It is flawed. It has a number of problems. Many of them have to do with the multiple hands on this movie, which I'm sure you guys have talked about many times and we'll probably talk about again as we go on. But I think the kind of vision that Zack Snyder had feels like it's been slowly rubbed aside to make way for the newer version of what the DCEU is supposed to represent. The movie, it's very cheerful and bright and all that Joss Whedon-ism in it as far as dialogue goes. It makes it more enjoyable to be around these characters. The problem I found is that it just feels a lot safer as well. The plot is very straightforward, and visually it's not that interesting. So it ends up having, for me, the exact opposite problems of Batman v Superman, where that movie was ambitious and overplotted and visually gorgeous, where this movie's underplotted, not very ambitious, and not that visually interesting, but it sells me on the characters. Like, that's the biggest bright spot of the film, is that it's fun to be around these characters, and I look forward to more adventures with them in their own solo films, let alone the upcoming, whatever following Justice League sequels there will be. So I think it's a fun film. I regret the idea that a Justice League movie came out, and not only was it not like the greatest thing ever, but it wasn't even a film where I'm like, this is the one I can't wait for. Based off, like, given the DCEU's track record going in, I would have loved to have been like, man, I can't wait for Justice League, but more now it's coming into us more like, well, like, I guess we're getting Justice League now, let's see how it goes.
I think that was what you just said. That was like Brian and I kind of our thought process going in, right, Brian?
Yeah, I'd agree.
You know,
there's like a universe where Zack Snyder, like maybe coming off like Watchmen, and Joss Whedon in general, those two making a Justice League movie, you'd be like, yes, why would I not want to see this? But now, 2017, we're like, yeah, all right, let's, when Star Wars, okay, Justice League, let's do that now. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Brian, do you want to give your take?
Yeah, well, I've said a couple times on the show, when they show the trailer before films, I watched the trailer leading up to this and thought, I could go my whole life and not watch this movie. Like, it just looked dour. It looked like the kind of whatever that is, modern heavy rock, like with an edge kind of feel they're trying to give it. And just the bugs and the CGI, nothing about it was making me excited. And I think, backing up a little bit, you and I mean, we just did our Man of Steel commentary, and that's a movie over time I've grown to like more and more. And Batman v Superman, you know, I've mentioned before that the extended edition or director's cut or whatever it's being labeled as, I enjoyed it a lot more seeing it that way. Wonder Woman, we both enjoyed, but this just wasn't doing anything for me. What I was seeing, But here we are. I knew I was going to have to do the show, so I went in and sat down. And when it was over, I was like, that was a blast.
Like, wow.
Okay. I actually left with a big smile on my face.
Wow. Okay. So I had no idea, Brian, what you were going to say. So looks like we're somewhat on the same page.
Yeah, I think – but it comes with a lot of caveats.
Yes.
Like Aaron was saying. And I think it requires a little bit of calibration. And what I realized halfway through was this feels like a comic book movie.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not overly complicated. It's not trying to root everything in a completely overwrought, nuanced humanity. Not that that's a bad thing. I mean, things – you know, you got to feel for your characters and they got to feel like human beings. But it was like – it just wanted to have fun, and it just wanted these characters that you think are cool for you to get excited about them and for you to be excited about them together and then working together and then saving the day. And I was like, this just feels like a Saturday morning cartoon come to life.
Yes.
And I mean that in a positive way.
I totally agree. I mean, when the movie ended, I was like, I felt like I just watched like an episode of, you know, the Justice League animated show.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's not a bad thing.
Well, it's funny, too, because I know there was people who were up in arms when they announced the length of the movie, which is just a sad commentary about things. But I was like, that was perfect. Like, it any longer would have been indulgent. I feel like they covered a lot of ground. I mean, whether or not it all felt entirely cohesive, I mean, people could feel one way or another about it. But, like, I felt like it was just the right length. And I think what I've noticed across the board for people who either liked it or don't like it, everyone seems to agree that the characters are good. And I would completely echo that. I think the characters, they really – I enjoyed each individual character. And I enjoyed this new – I mean, quote unquote, new take on them. I mean, Superman's suit is blue.
Yes. Hold on. Wait, Superman's in this movie? Is that a spoiler?
Oh, sorry. Spoiler.
He's part of the Justice League? Yeah. His second build?
Yeah. And it's just like there was actually a moment where Lois Lane and Clark's mom are talking to each other. And that actually, the most simplest of moments, I was like, wait a minute. There's color in this scene.
Right. Her hair is red.
Yeah, Amy Adams' hair is red. That, you know, that wall is blue. And then I started noticing it through the rest of the movie, and it really did something to the mood of the film. And I don't know. I had a good time with it. So, I mean, more to say about the comedy and the tone and characters and whatnot, but I'd be curious to hear your take now.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, something Aaron said where, like, the movie ends and you're like, oh, you know, I'm excited to see more from these characters. Well, shit, I mean, that's what you want out of this kind of a universe. I mean, that's something that Marvel has figured out, where every movie ends and you're like, all right, well, let's see what happens with the next one. You know, Brian, you talk about how sometimes it's like, you know, the movies themselves may be more or less vapor in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
But the one ends and you're like, all right, well, I'll pick things up in, you know, 6 months or whatever, and we'll catch up with this universe.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when Batman vs. Superman came out, that was my major complaint, is that movie ended, and I was like, this is a nightmare horror show universe that when you tell me, oh, we're going to be back in a year with Justice League, that's like a threat to me.
Right.
You know? And that was, I mean, I remember when Batman vs. Superman ended, I was like, and I'm pretty sure I talked to you about this. I was like, I feel like I already know what Justice League is going to look like,
mm-hmm,
and what it's going to feel like, and I'm just not interested in that. So what I saw in my head, we did not get.
Yeah.
You know, and I, you know, to the point about all the behind the scenes, you know, stuff, it's completely separate from, you know, Zack Snyder's real life tragedy. I mean, it's almost, I, the question is sort of like, do we kind of have to grade this one on a curve a little bit?
Mm.
Given all the, I mean, like, I'm amazed it works as well as it does, considering everything that happened leading up to its release.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know? Yeah. I mean, it felt like the mess it could have felt like.
I mean, I give it credit for being a serviceable film, but like, I wouldn't grade any movie on a curve based off behind the scene things. Like, if Warner Brothers put this movie out, this is the movie that I'm going to grade. Like, that's the movie I'm going to critique. I mean, it's not a college essay. It's a movie. I'm like, the dog ate my, you know, I forgot to save a part, so I had to redo something. It's like, whatever. This is the movie that Warner Brothers and Rat Pack Entertainment, featuring lots of people that we really admire. they're like, this is it, guys. This is the movie that you're getting. And we're like, you can ask the same questions about something like Brave, which lost its director like halfway through, and also feels like two different movies in one. It's like, I don't feel a need to adjust a score because I know things have happened beyond these, mainly because the average moviegoer also doesn't know this. They that's just right. went to see a movie. And I mean, that's what I have to judge this as, a person that's went to watch a movie. I can take in a context if I want to and go into detail, which I basically have in, you know, my written review of the film. But, you know, as far as judging the movie on what it's doing, this is the movie that they're presenting to me. That's what I have to kind of, you know.
That's a good point. And you know, I will say, and maybe this is just me, because some critiques I've read are very like, oh, you can tell what Snyder did and what Whedon did. I'll be honest and say the seams didn't really show for me. And I, maybe I'm in the minority there, but it mostly enraptured me. So, I mean, I file that in the win column.
I mean, I couldn't go, you know, through like a list of like, this is a Whedon scene and this is a Snyder scene, because I also think that's fruitless. But yeah. I do think that there's a way to discern which scenes feel like they've been adjusted or just are new in general. There's an entire scene in the second act. Jeez, I can't have to dance around stuff before we get to spoilers.
I think I know what you're talking about.
There's an entire scene in the second act where there's a confrontation between our heroes. Okay. And it's so... Part of my problem is that I like Zack Snyder as a director. I think with the right script and the right concentration, he can be a very effective filmmaker. I think visually, he's proven himself to be as much with his previous efforts. Mileage may vary on how much you appreciate some of them. The scene I'm speaking of, it feels so off as far as like a Zack Snyder film. It feels so kind of the setting that they're in, the location they're in, and how it's being shown to me. It just feels like, okay, they redid all of this. Like this doesn't feel like a Zack Snyder movie anymore. And not like a big comparison I had was honestly something like Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland, where it feels like I'll make that make sense. It feels like that's a movie I don't like. And it's because Tim Burton's, it feels like he's phoning it in. It feels like, well, of course you get Tim Burton to direct Alice in Wonderland. That just makes sense. And even he's like, yep, I don't really have much to bring to this, so I'm just going to kind of deliver the generic version of a Tim Burton movie. And that's what some scenes in Justice League feel like. They feel like they're off from what Zack Snyder does, but they still kind of try to ape what he does. And there are some scenes in this movie that feel like that, where it just Batman v Superman has problems, but it has this kind of big operatic, grandiose feel to it, right, where the stakes, which are far less than Justice League. I mean, it's just about two assholes beating each other up, essentially.
Right. That was the original title, by the way.
Two assholes to Dawn of Justice. Where, like, this movie, it should feel like the world's at stake, and that never really comes across. And that's what I was talking about, kind of with the visual. I'm trying not to be too all over the place before we get to spoilers, but there are scenes like this where I feel like if Snyder was like, you know, in it, like if you know, tragedy had not befallen him, which is a terrible thing, honestly. You know, I'm sure you guys have talked about it, and you know, it's been, and everyone understands this. It's an unfortunate situation that he's been put in, and that the film's been put in, as far as rustling together this massive superhero epic and making that work. But the results that I got are a film where there are times when the scope just doesn't feel big. It feels very contained, and this that I'm speaking to is one of those examples where it's like, all right, I get that there's a confrontation here and there are characters that are against each other, but you're not selling, you know, as much as I didn't necessarily like a dingy bathroom fight between Batman and Superman, at least it felt big. It felt like, okay, this is a big thing. This is like these two guys, these titans are fighting each other. And in this movie, it's like, all right, that's a fun, like, I could see that on a comic book. Like you guys mentioned, it feels like a comic book movie. And I agree with that for the most part. Like, again, it's a fun film. And there are scenes like that, much like Avengers, where it's like, well, what would it be like if this person fought this person? And it kind of delivers that to a point. But at the same time, it's like, I feel like some of this could have been done differently and like more
on a bigger canvas, you're saying.
The scope, a lack of scope.
And I think that especially applies to the third act. But, yeah.
We'll get there in a second.
Yeah.
Brian, did you want to say anything before we go to spoilers?
No, the last thing I'll say before spoilers is, to my surprise, and when I realized that I was enjoying the film, was when Wonder Woman is introduced. I actually think I might have said out loud, "Hell yeah," or something like that. And then Cyborg has like a moment. I was like, "Yeah." And then Flash had a moment. I was like, "Yeah." And then another character I won't bring up by name until after spoilers had a moment. I was like, "Hell yeah." And I realized I said
that.
Did
people in the theater tell you to shut up at some point?
Yeah. But no, that was completely involuntary. Like the movie made me feel that way about each of them. And that's when I realized, I knew going in that people were being hard on it, but I was like, I'm kind of having fun.
Yeah.
So,
and that's what I want to keep emphasizing too, as we get into this and it feels like I'm going to be more negative, where it's like, it's not a matter of I want to be negative or whatnot. It's like, I acknowledge the fun this movie gives me, but it's not without its problems. And I just, if you're making a Justice League movie in this, realm where there are so many big movies on a fairly consistent basis, I feel like this should be like the top tier of these movies. Like this should be like the thing you want to see the most and delivers the most. And it just, it's not getting that to that point. So we're like, you have, some of the most well-known superheroes in the world. And the movie that they come up with is just more or less satisfying. Hmm. And shouldn't this be like, on the Mount Rushmore of superhero movies? When you say Justice League, wouldn't you like kind of want to get that from it? Like,
I get what you're saying. I really do.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't have to it helps me out, but that I don't have as huge a stake in what it accomplishes. Like I'm just going in and like, all right, what do you got for me? And I was a little surprised too, because everyone in our theater, I've seen a couple of movies opening night now, big ones, and they haven't been very full. And this one was packed and everybody was into it. I mean, people were applauding, people were laughing. Everyone knew to stay till the end of the credits. And when we walked out, everyone seemed to be in a great mood.
Isn't that a fun feeling when everyone like sits down during the credits because they all know, and then you like
you
see those like three people that leave, you're like, dude, what year is it? Like, what movie have you seen? Unless you really got to go to the bathroom, I mean, you got to stay, right?
Yeah, so like I realize that it's it's not going to win any awards, and maybe it won't go on the Mount Rushmore of superhero films. Even though, like you say, and I don't disagree with you, that a Justice League introduction movie probably should. But I was like, man, I had a good time. Everyone there seemed to have a good time. And then I'll move on to Star Wars in a couple weeks.
Well, let's get into some spoilers here.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Okay, so obviously the big spoiler, which we accidentally alluded to earlier, is that Superman is in this movie.
Superman lives, some would say.
Shocked, I tell you. Shocked, yes. Superman lives, and he is not played by Nicolas Cage, so that's...
Unfortunately.
Now, I will say, and I said this in my review, the movie won me over from minute one.
I saw that. I didn't read your full review, but I saw that, and I was like, oh, man, here we go. Like, as soon as it was starting, I was like, what happened that Zachy was so taken with? And immediately I was like, yep.
So I'll say this about minute one, or at least the first couple minutes. Something that, and this seems like such a minuscule complaint about Batman v Superman in the scheme of things, but it really did bother me when you guys remember the opening of Batman v Superman, not the like the perfume commercial of the Wayne parents dying, which is nonsense, but like it's even that's how it's shot. It's ridiculous. But the even more minuscule.
That's a dark ass perfume commercial, by the way.
It is. But like, do you guys remember the text like how the credits were being displayed?
I do. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like size like 11 font, like in the corner of the screen. And I'm thinking, if we're making Batman v Superman, shouldn't like the words Batman v Superman be like just displayed in front of me in like the biggest font possible? Like, especially given how operatic that film is. Like, this is like, this seems obvious to me. Like, let's just put it right there. Batman v Superman. Dawn of Justice. Way too many words, but still, Dawn of Justice. Now, Justice League gets this right. They're like, fuck it. We heard what Aaron was saying because we listened to just him. And they put it right there on the front for me. So, like, all right, Justice League already started well. Like, I was happy with that.
Just with the title. And so before the title, we get the POV found footage of Superman talking to these kids.
Yeah.
And that literally, I started smiling as soon as I saw that, because I was like, they are retroactively turning Henry Cavill's Superman into the Christopher Reeve Superman.
Right.
Joss Whedon's.
Say that again?
That's a Joss Whedon scene.
Is it a Joss Whedon scene? I believe it.
Between that and the weird, the mustache stuff, which his face is weird in that one, which, you know, seeing it once, again, it's hard to kind of nail which scenes are which, but there's some bad mouth stuff in this movie.
Yeah, I'm going to have to keep an eye out. So yeah, what Aaron's talking about, in case you don't know listening, is that when they brought in Henry Cavill for the reshoots, he was still contracted for Mission Impossible 6. And part of his contract is he could not shave the mustache that his character has in the movie. So Warner Bros. Was like, no problem. We'll just CGI that sucker out of there. And apparently it's very obvious. I have to admit, I was not paying attention for it, but now I have a feeling that when I watch it again, like, that's all I'll see.
It's not something that downgraded the movie for me. Like, it's not to that point, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, I see where the budget kind of kicked in for his face on this one.
That's funny.
That's going to be such a weird piece of trivia, like, 30 years from now, when people are looking back at Justice League.
Right. I wonder if, like, the alternate mustache footage will be on the Blu-ray or whatever.
That would actually be kind of a fun little 1 minute extra.
Superman with like a porno stash?
Yeah.
Well, it has to be just like a green strip over his face, right? Or something like that. Like,
oh, yeah. Right.
Which probably makes it more hilarious when you're filming a scene. He has like a green piece of tape over his face.
It's kryptonite. See, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Good scene, though. I agree with you, Zachy. I do think that's a good, like, all right, we've got the message. We got to make this a bit different.
Yeah,
you really like Wonder Woman. You like
set the tempo from the ground floor. Not only that, his like Brian said, his costume is blue. It's bright, blazing, noticeably blue.
Yes,
and
noticeably different.
Yeah, and so for me, I mean, I'm Superman fanboy number one. Right there, they were like, basically that scene might as well have been Henry Cavill as Superman looking directly at the camera, like, Zachy, it's going to be okay, man. Just trust me, you know?
We got you.
You know? Just kind of give it a thumbs
up. Can we all agree that we'd all listen to that kid's podcast also?
Right.
So, like, that'd be like that top of the charts at iTunes if that kid got his podcast with Superman in it.
Just
like,
Superman talking about hope.
Yeah.
Right.
But so that's where it won me over. And then you know, I think to some extent I was like an easy lay after that, because like I got that right off the top they were signaling a course correction, and the stuff that bothered me, it's funny because you talk about how the scope feels more limited as compared to Batman vs Superman, and for me personally I liked that. It did feel slightly smaller, even though, like, I felt like Batman vs Superman, the climax was too big for the confrontation, which you mentioned too. I like in this one that, yes, technically it's a bigger thing, but it's still not like, oh, the entire world is watching this thing happening. It's happening in a relatively remote place, and it's semi-contained. Now, just to be clear, I think the villain in this movie is friggin' garbage.
Yeah,
you know, I've kind of come around on Steppenwolf, because when you boil it down to what he's trying to do, it's basically this guy's trying to he was so embarrassed by the last time that he's back. That makes him very human, which I actually kind of like. It's like, I lost this big battle in front of all my friends, so I'm back to try it again. That's basically his motivation.
No, I can dig his motivation. I think his depiction was like, I'm sitting here. I'm like, if you've got, like, why not just get Kyron Hines for real, put him in some makeup, put him in a costume, yeah. Like, make him a person instead of this, right. Like, you know, really, like, rubbery looking, not very visually appealing or interesting CGI, you know, concoction.
Yeah, from a visual stuff, I agree. Like, and I was also, I didn't realize that it was just his voice. I thought when they cast Kieran Hines, because paid no attention to the actual villain, which the marketing also doesn't do.
Right, that's true.
So I was like, oh, okay. And then when he showed up, I was like, I'm generally pretty good at recognizing faces behind the makeup and stuff. It's like, where's Kieran Hines in this? I'm like, oh, okay, it's just CG and it's just his voice. It's like,
he's basically Hugo Weaving in the Transformers movies in this.
Yeah.
You know?
But at least they'll make that Kieran Hines money this weekend. It's a good thing they got him.
Brian, what were you saying about Steppenwolf?
Oh, no, he felt more like an obligation than anything.
The villain of the movie felt like an obligation.
Yeah, and I mean, I actually agree with you about the stakes that are involved, though, with that. I did appreciate that. I mean, the world was at stake, but we were at where it was beginning, and they were stopping it at its source, and it wasn't the whole world watching again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm reminded of, like, X-Men Apocalypse, I think, where, like, the whole world, we're seeing, like, the Sydney opera is getting torn apart, and then here's the Golden Gate Bridge or whatever, and it's just, you know, at some point you're like, all right, I get it, you know?
It's not a matter of, I guess, needing the world to be in peril, which it, you know, apparently is in this film. It's just more of how it's showing something like this. I don't need, like, outside shots of, like, utter destruction or whatnot, but I do think there's a way to film...
Convey the stakes, you're saying.
Yeah, just to convey it better. And I don't think...
That's fair. No, I agree with that.
Because there's a lot of, like, we're on this, like, walkway and we're fighting here, and it's like, I mean, there's, like, giant towers and stuff in this final climax, and I'm like, it feels like there could be more peril here. Mm-hmm. And I get that the film's, you know, it's more about let's bring this team together and let's make that work, as opposed to let's bring this team together to stop this ultimate bad guy. Like, it's you know, the bad guy's a means to an end. I get that. Like, that makes sense to me. I still like that, like, he's, you know, he's just like, oh, I got pants in front of my friend, so I'm back now to do things. Like, that, the more I think about it, the more it humors me. And I'm thinking, okay, that's better than, you know, Malekith or whatever other Marvel villain we don't care about in these movies.
That's right. That's, I mean... But, you know, if anything, Steppenwolf visually, I mean, you could have tossed him into Thor the Dark World and I don't think anybody would have noticed, you know, it's visually, he's just kind of, I mean, it's interesting too, because in the comics, Steppenwolf has a unique look, you know, and he looks like a dude. So it feels like they tried to up his power set and make him visually resemble Darkseid. And I do wonder about that, actually. Like, you know, when we talk about all the reshoots and stuff, was Darkseid more of a presence in this movie? And then they just kind of whittled him down.
Scaled it back. Yeah.
I have something to say, but I want to finish up the real point about the ending real quick, or about the climax. Yeah. I do agree with you as far as I like that the ending wasn't, like, overlong. I feel like it's a huge problem in a lot of these movies where it's like, all right, let's get a lot of fighting in just to make sure there's a lot of fighting for whatever reason. And, you know, it kind of feels easy, like as if you didn't really need all five of these guys and gal to jump in and, you know, take on. Seems like one of them could have taken on Steppenwolf and probably been all right in the end. But at the same time, I do like that. It's like, all right, yeah, this wasn't too tough of a battle. Didn't exhaust me as far as an audience viewer. It's like, hey, they got in, they got out, done. Like, that's a nice change of pace.
Yeah, like what we were just saying with the Man of Steel, Zachy, where we were watching some of the battles, we're like, and stop.
Right.
You know, but then it goes on for another 13 minutes.
Yeah, there's still three other skyscrapers they didn't destroy yet.
Yeah, right. I mean, Man of Steel, like, that's when, I, you know, when all the upset was happening because it was only quote unquote 121 minutes. I'm like, why are we looking at this as a problem? Thank God it's only 121 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's stripped down to, and it's, you know, that's with credits. Like, it's really like an hour 50, like, without anything else. It's like probably like the shortest modern superhero movie coming out right now. Like, it's certainly like one of the big ones, which is somewhat impressive. Like, Thor Ragnarok's longer than this movie. Doesn't need to be, but it is.
Right.
But yeah, what were we talking about?
We're talking about the climax.
Climax. Yeah. It's just, it's refreshing. It is refreshing that it doesn't take too long to get to what it's doing, I guess.
Yeah. I think along those lines, normally I sort of zone out or go cross-eyed when it just becomes like a CGI cluster going on screen. But I actually was aware as I was watching it, I'm like, oh, like I'm kind of tracking this. I'm kind of enjoying it. And then they got in, got out for the middle battle where they were underground. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, all right. And then we got out of there and I was like, that was kind of fun. And like, then at the end also, like, yeah, instead of it just becoming complete indiscernible chaos, it just felt reined in a little bit. And I just kind of stuck with it. And I knew this guy needed to hurry over here. They need to get the citizens out of there and da 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 da. And I was like, yeah, I didn't feel about it like I tend to with those sorts of things. Yeah.
Well, I think it helps that the banter is good enough. Like, yes. And honestly, Superman's presence is awesome. Like, the way, like, you talk about his kind of change that they show you right away, Zachy, at the beginning.
Yeah.
And it really reflects when he comes back to life, where it's like, I like this Superman. Like, I was fine with what Cavill was doing in the previous films, just more of, especially in Batman v Superman, just not getting enough of what he's about, because he's mute for most of that movie, which is really annoying, where he just doesn't say anything. He's like, dude, you can talk. Like, you're supposed to be this beacon of shining light here. Let me hear what you have to say about stuff. And he just refuses to speak for a lot of the movie.
He just has his eyebrow knitted, and he kind of, you know, looks longingly in various directions. Yeah.
Yeah. And here he's, you know, he's less like Atlas and more one of the more fun Greek gods, I guess. Like,
Hercules.
He's more Zeus. Like, he's like, yeah, let me just throw things around, see what happens. But like, he's having so much fun, like, being alive, which he literally says. It's like, I like being alive. Like, this is nice. And like, he gets down to Cyborg and he's like, hey, so what are we doing here? What's the plan? It's just like, it's so, that's a Superman I like seeing. Even if it defies the kind of vision that Snyder originally had for where this was going, I like this change of pace here, and that leads to more, you know, movies like this, as far as a Man of Steel 2, which will apparently happen some point in the 2020s or whatever else. Like, it's like, yeah, I like seeing this version of him. I like this uplifting version of Superman that doesn't make me feel like I need to buy him like a gift to cheer him up once in a while or something.
You know, that was a moment that surprised me, actually, when Superman said, I like being alive, and Cyborg was like, me too. I was surprised how it warmed my heart because he, you know, began the movie wishing that he had been kept dead. And I was like, I really felt that. That moment worked for me.
I mean, the idea of Superman just by his presence is an inspiration, right? So he's inspiring the entire team to be the best version of himself.
Yeah. Oh, and then that led to another great comedic moment where Flash rescues a family in the truck, and he thinks he did something really meaningful and big, and then he looks over and sees Superman flying by with the whole apartment complex.
That's right.
Did you guys like the constant views of the family, this like northern Russian family that we're constantly like getting a reminder of because there's parademons outside their doors?
I was thinking of that when you were saying about scope. I mean, they didn't really show a whole village punched over worried. It was really personified through this one family, but it didn't really bother me, if I'm being honest. I really liked the moment where the girl grabbed the bug spray.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was pretty, that had to be, it's unfair to do this, but every now and then I'd be like, Whedon. And the whole thing, like, what's death like? And he's like, itchy or something like that. Or like, what, coming back to life, what's it feel like? He's like, itchy. I was like, Whedon.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's the thing is, you know, you're going to have film scholars and fanboys poring over this movie for years, like frame by frame, like this is a Snyder, this is, you know, and it, I mean, it's to me, it's, I don't know what the intention was before Snyder had to leave, because he said all along that the goal was to lighten things up in Justice League. Now, I don't know.
I mean, you know, he was saying that kind of after the fact, after the BVS stuff, because I...
Knowing he was going to have to.
I have some thoughts on the reshoot stuff, because like, they're claiming it's been like, it was like 15 to 20%, and I kind of feel like they're stretching the truth a bit there, because it's... Right. I mean, there's a reason we heard so much about Superman's mustache. It's because they had to reshoot basically all of Superman, because I really think the darkness was probably mostly still there. Like, it was probably still a very gritty, grim superhero film, maybe less so than Batman v Superman, just because of the nature of the story and how you have to combine heroes as opposed to putting them against each other. But, I mean, remember, guys, this was supposed to be like a two-part Justice League movie originally.
Oh, yeah, and, no, we don't talk about that anymore. That's down
and
the
we, and we also know that we knew that there was a version of this that was a lot like the actual comics where Cavill, where Superman comes back and he has the gray, you know, the gray suit on and like a beard and long hair. Like, that was a thing that was going to be in this movie. And they changed that.
They teased the black suit for
sure.
They
did.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, because they probably shot it. And then they're like, wait a minute. People don't like how grim this is. We need to do something about this. Sorry, Zack Snyder. You need to hire on Joss. And then horrible things happen to Zack Snyder. It's like, sorry again, Zack Snyder. We have to have another director here. Like, or he's going to relinquish control. And it's it feels like a movie that had, like, based off, especially after watching Batman, it's like they had there was a vision for this. Like, there was a direction they wanted to go with this. I don't know what it was exactly, but it feels like a movie where the Superman stuff they had is much different than what we actually got. Now, it helps that I like the Superman stuff. I wish it was. Yeah, like that scene I was talking about before, spoilers, is that whole Superman fighting everybody else sequence. Yeah. And that's a scene where it's like, Zack Snyder would never film like on a green lawn that seems so bland and out of place. That feels off to me. Like, that doesn't seem like a Snyder type scenario. I wonder what it would have been to have this kind of grizzled Superman that's come back from the dead and has, you know, is in dark, is in, I know only Brian's watched this, but he's in 11 episode 7 mode where he's really dark. but it's
slick back hair.
You know what's funny about the scene when Superman comes back and he's fighting him at the memorial is I kept looking at that one cop. You know what I'm talking about? And I'm just like, it's just weird because he's there through all of it. They're like, Clark, Clark, Clark. And I'm like, are you guys going to kill that cop? Like, what's going to happen here? Like, like Lois Lane just shows up, you know?
He's in now. He's in on the secrets.
He's part of the league.
He's part of the league. He's one of the Wonder Twins.
I kept looking at that cop. Like, I couldn't stop looking at him because I'm like, what's going to happen with this guy now, you know?
It's like, you know what moment I loved during that was when Flash started speeding around Superman, and then Superman keeps up with him
right
at his pace, and Flash is like, "Oh boy!"
I like the headbutt battle between Superman and Wonder Woman, where like they all give each other headbutts, and it's like, "Yep,
yeah,
people have powers,
right?
Things aren't going well." It's like, this is the Injustice scene right here. That's what this is.
Yeah, the video game, right? Brian, were there other moments that jumped out at you?
Well, it was interesting how they lightened up Batman a little bit.
Let's talk about it. I
think like the big moment I noticed it was when he was on that lawn. He's like, something is definitely bleeding.
That's a Whedon line. Absolutely.
totally Whedon. But I was like, you know, they did a good job of lightening him up without making him seem like a buffoon out of nowhere.
Sure.
Even though he could be tossed around by all of them. I don't know. I thought they did actually bounce that pretty well.
So I'll say this about, because I feel like Affleck is kind of coming up short as far as the team here.
Yeah.
It feels like despite the kind of mixed reaction to Batman v Superman, people generally liked Affleck. Like, that was the thing they responded, which was ironic given all the, you know, how he was going to ruin the film because they casted him because, you know,
there were all the petitions and stuff,
all that stuff. And then the movie comes out and it's like, oh, we're kind of mixed on this, but Affleck was great. I was with him all along. Like, that's the reaction it got. And that's how everyone sounds, by the way. You don't need to hear anybody else. You can just listen to my interpretation of that. and I think in this movie, for some reason, they're like, well, people like that Affleck, but we should probably change him completely. And he is. Like, he's very much different from the Batman v Superman Ben Affleck. And I wasn't.
But I mean, to be fair, Aaron, I mean, there's an in-story reason for that, which is that.
There's a, I mean, he was on the brink in Batman v Superman, where in this film he's like, I've come around to what Superman was trying to accomplish.
Right.
He wasn't an asshole. He was actually trying to do a good thing. He was about hope, and now I got to find some super friends so I can bring that hope message back.
Right.
But whether it be because of reshoots and just being tired, or just how he was being directed, I just feel like Affleck wasn't bringing much as Bruce Wayne. Like, as Batman, Batman doesn't require too much.
It definitely feels like he's got, like, one foot out the door.
It does. It feels kind of like, I wouldn't say phoning it in necessarily, because I know what that looks like, because I watched X-Men Apocalypse. But the, like, here, I feel like it's not... it doesn't feel as... It's not Adam West, and Adam West is great doing that version of Batman, but it's not, you know, there's a line of playing Bruce Wayne, and I feel like besides some of the, like, Jeremy Irons stuff, because that's pretty much gold all the way through, it felt lesser to me. It felt more like Ben Affleck playing a typical Ben Affleck type character as opposed to playing Bruce Wayne.
You know, it didn't bother me as much. Like, I get what you're saying. Like, I don't think I necessarily disagree with that. I guess for me, it was just nice to... I think I'll tell you what I plugged into. Because most of the stuff where he's out of costume is or out of the cowl, you know, it's like it's the characters just sort of bantering with each other. And I plugged into all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, because it just... it was weird because... It's the same stuff I like most in the Marvel movies, is when these characters are just being around each other and they're being friends. Like, that's obviously in Thor Ragnarok, you know, the Thor Hulk Thor Banner relationship is the most fun part. To me, I like the banter, but also the relationship with Diana, which is just walks right up to the line of kind of sexual chemistry, but doesn't pursue that. I liked all that stuff. So I didn't mind that he had all the affectations, you know?
Yeah.
I was still
that's his memoir, Affectation. Yeah.
Copyright it quick.
Damon's is Damonese, by the way.
See, I think for me, like, the final scene of the movie where, you know, we have, you know, Bruce Wayne bought the Kent farm, and you know,
which I said the line before they said it, because it just seemed like such an easy setup for a joke, where he's like, how'd you do that, by the way? I bought the farm. And sure enough, that's exactly what he says. Right.
No, I
bought the bank. I bought the bank.
Right. I love his thing after that, too. He's like, I don't know. It's just something I do. It's a reflex.
It's like, it's just a default I have. Like, I like that was a fun little
bit. That's fun.
But in that scene, you know, I love that it's like, Bruce, thanks for doing this. Oh, Clark. But like, I'm like, wow, that's, you know, that's.
I bought their budding friendship in that scene.
I totally did. Yeah, exactly.
I agree. And I think it's more like. I think it's because the things that I like about this movie are so simple. It's just like, well, yeah, the cast is fun together. There's a spirit. There's a high spiritedness that I enjoy. And the message is overall good as far as, like, you know, finding allies that you can team up with to help project a sense of hope in the world. Like, that's good. And that's easy to kind of summarize. But in order to kind of, like, talk about this movie, I feel like I have to sadly come down on the things that don't work, which is, you know, it can be annoying, but at the same time, I think it's useful to discuss. I think that, you know,
oh, for sure.
Get into this.
And it's definitely like, it's, you know, somebody asked me the other day, like, one of my students was like, when you write a review, like, what stuff are you looking for? And my response was, I write a review working outward from my initial reaction. So in other words, if the movie ends and I'm like, man, I had fun, then I sort of unpack from there and I figure out why I reacted the way I did. And if I'm like, man, that wasn't very good, then I, you know. And so for me, it's like the movie ends and I'm like, I can quibble about this and that, but like when all is said and done, I had a big grin on my face. And for a movie like this, that's what I want most. What I want most is to feel hope, you know? So that's my reaction. And you know, related to that is after Batman v Superman, I was like, I can't take my kids to this movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I love that I can absolutely take my kids to Justice League and they're going to have a blast with it, you know?
You know, it's funny. Like, when I rewatch Batman v Superman, it has like the, you know, it's on Blu-ray. It has like the rating disclaimer. And because of the Ultimate Edition, it says R. Right. And I was like, oh yeah, that's right. It's supposed to be R. And I'm like, wait, why did this happen again? Like, at what point was Warner Brothers like, okay, we got our boy Snyder, because apparently he's the director we should be championing the most for these superhero movies, and we're like going to let him do what he wants. And his ultimate version is rated R. And it's like, at what point were you guys reading like his script and seeing his storyboards and being like, yeah, this should be like really dark and violent and made for an age set between 16 and 24 male. Like, right. What shouldn't this be like? This is Batman and Superman. These are like the most notable, likable characters in the world. Yeah. And you've made a movie that very much limits it to a very specific audience that will very much write horrible things online about it. Right. Just ruin the whole purpose of having superheroes that you're supposed to look up to, because hey, Batman throws a guy against a wall and blood goes everywhere, and Superman is using laser vision to destroy people. Like, it's like, what movie are we supposed to be watching? Yeah, so run rates it back. It's nice. It's
and I'm actually genuinely curious because Batman versus Superman has prompted like equal measure of just, you know,
fury,
adoration online by people who just embrace it. And this is true. There are people online who call Zack Snyder Zaddy, as in Zack Daddy Zaddy.
What? Wow.
Yeah, like
I don't want to be.
Isn't that
like
weird?
A brony, like, or something?
What's that, Brian?
I was just like the bronies.
Yeah,
like
I just. I mean, this whole like in Zach we trust, and it's very, and it's. I'm not coming down on him, because I genuinely think he's a talented director, and I think Brian, you've talked about this before. Like he knows how to put a shot together.
Yeah, I just got the Dawn of the Dead Scream Factory Blu-ray edition, which is a movie that I saw four times in theaters. Because
I really like that movie.
Yeah. Like Dawn of the Dead, the original, is one of my favorite movies. And so the idea of him doing a remake, and he wasn't a name at the time, it's just like, okay, they're doing a remake.
Right.
And they did it, and I'm like, wow, this is not quite the classic, but this is damn entertaining. And ever since then, I'm like, I want to see what Zack Snyder does. He made a fucking great Dawn of the Dead movie.
Yeah.
And like, for the most part, like, I enjoy 300 for what it is. Watchmen's one of my favorite books of all time, so it's like, well, he did it, like, and I think there's a lot to admire in it.
I think the director's cut of Watchmen is a damn good movie.
It's the first half is certainly great. There's a first half thing he has that certainly stands out. Sucker Punch is a movie. After that, other movies, and I do like the Legends of the Guardians, the Owls of Gahuli. That's a fun title to try to remember.
I lose interest halfway through the title of that one.
But no, what I'm saying is, and I said this to begin with, I do like Snyder in general. I think sometimes the ambition outweighs the final product, but at the same time,
I agree with that.
Like, yep, there's always the effort is there. It's the same logic that I generally have with Michael Bay, who I also know gets hated a lot, and some people really, you know, trust in him. Where I think there's work that's done that is unique to him, that he's very capable of doing. Now it often gets overweighed by a number of other problems, but at the end of the day, I do think he's a talented visual artist. And so for Zack Snyder, it's like, it's there and you have this massive playground to work with. I just wish it could, you know, be handled better at times. And this time around, it got handled too much, I think.
Well, I think, you know, ultimately, he's a good visualist. He's not necessarily a good scenarist. And I feel like with Batman versus Superman, we sort of reached the limit of how he sees these characters.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not going to say his interpretation is wrong, because I don't think there is necessarily a wrong interpretation when the characters just reinvent themselves. But I was like, this is just not a take that I can really glom onto. So
I agree with that. Like, yeah. I'm happy to see it. Because Superman to me is not a favorite character of mine, because I think he's a little ordinary, or a little.
Oh, Aaron.
Okay. I'll phrase
Aaron
it differently.
Making
it's
his one and only appearance on movie film.
Superman, I think there are interesting ways to handle them. I've certainly read a number of comics that show me the capability Superman has as a character to make him appealing to me, or more so anyway. Yeah. And on film, it's like, all right, let's see what Snyder's going to do. And he did something that initially sounded intriguing, but in execution was like, yeah, I mean, it's different, but it's not something that's I may have issues with Superman as far as how far my interest goes with him, but mm-hmm. Richard Donner knocked it out of the park the first time. They haven't really done anything since that's made it better for me. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, like this version of him, we got to do something about it. And this film does something about it.
It does. Well, with that in mind, I mean, there's the two after credit scenes, and of those, the first is the Batman Superman, or sorry, the Superman Flash race,
right?
Which is one of these archetypal things that has happened numerous times in the comics, and man, I just loved it. I just thought it was a great moment.
Yeah. We should talk about his character. We haven't talked about anybody else. We should talk about all these guys.
Should. Yeah. Yeah. What did you guys think of Ezra Miller as Flash?
He's a nice Jewish boy. I like that. he's fun. He's having a lot of fun here. He's a lot of like young Jeff Goldblumism.
That's going what he has. I read somebody comparing him to Jeff Goldblum. I was like, yeah, that's perfect.
Really? Wow. I did not see that. Now I'm going to view him differently.
But he's fun. Like he's having a. I think it compared to Aquaman, which we'll get to next, I guess, or Cyborg. I think.
Liked Aquaman, I think, more than you did.
Well, what I was going to say is that I think the Flash, because of the TV show, and because I think people generally like the Flash more than they do Aquaman and Cyborg. Cyborg's different because I think kids love Cyborg based off some other stuff. But I think the Flash has a level of familiarity that I think people kind of already were able to glom onto. Plus, he's like an everyman. He's like a kid. He's like a
The team's everyman.
Not everyone's been Jason Momoa, but everyone's been Ezra Miller. Like, sure. It's been a difference there. And so, like, it's fun to watch him, and, like, you kind of know his story already, be it because of the TV show or because of other things. So it's like, you get it. And it's a really relatable thing. It's a kid, his father's in jail, and it's sad, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's all right there. And, like, his kind of earnestness really pushes him forward. Like, it's fun to be around him, and obviously he's the most comedic of the characters, so, you know, it works out.
Yeah, he won me over eventually. I think at first I felt like his enthusiasm felt a little forced or something. And I think for me it was like he was behaving like the new Spider-Man.
Yes.
Uh-huh. But he was totally. Like 30 years old. You know what I mean? And I was like, he might be a little old for how he's acting. But
I mean, he played like a 9-year-old in Fantastic Beasts. So, I mean, Ezra Miller just likes to play young. I think that's the
idea. Really? No, I never saw that.
He's kind of like...
A 9-year-old?
Well, like the kind of it's that's a weird like movie. A we don't even talk, but like the, no, it's just the emotionally. That's what I mean.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe that's his thing. Yeah, but by the end, I totally loved him, and I loved it when he reacted to the bat signal in the sky. I was like right there with him. So yeah, it was.
I love the pet cemetery thing. Like
yeah, that was funny.
I think they called back to it. Pet cemetery.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw the movie with my friend Forbes' Scott Mendelson. We saw it again. We laughed quite a bit at the Pet Cemetery. For some reason, that got us. We're just like, wow, that's hilarious.
That's a good callback.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was mentioning Aquaman earlier. I don't know. I've been, Brian, you know this. Like from the moment Jason Momoa was announced as Aquaman, I was like, he's going to be an awesome Aquaman. And I really liked him. I know it seems like just anecdotally from looking at the reviews, people are sort of hot and cold on him. I like the movie ended. I'm like, I want to watch the Aquaman movie. Bring it on.
You know what's funny? I kept saying every time I saw him in the trailers, it made me think like that song from the middle 2000s, like that. Ooh, wah!
I should have Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, it is Dawn of the Dead. I kept expecting that needle drop anytime it showed him. And
if Snyder had finished the movie, that would have happened.
Well, and I told my brother that before we watched the movie. And then when it shows him and it's like, you know, like that white stripe song, my brother slowly turned his head and looked at me. I was like, yeah.
My man. Aquaman is fun too. Like when I walked, like I generally have a pretty good idea of what I'm going to get out of a movie, so I'm always happy to be surprised and less so disappointed. But you know, when I'm surprised by something, and I wasn't necessarily surprised by Justice League, but I walked in thinking, at the very least, this movie will be entertaining with The Flash and Aquaman being like the best parts. And that's pretty much what I got in this movie. It's like, yeah, it's fun. And also those two are the best parts. And Aquaman is fun. Jason Momoa is doing something. You cast him for a reason because he has a physique and it's there and it's in full force. He's playing this kind of muscle bound version of Aquaman and it's cool. Like it's a cool take on the character.
Yeah.
I have less familiarity with kind of him. So when you got to his whole scene with Hera, right? Is it Hera?
Mira.
That character and just the whole
played by Amber Heard.
Played the whole Atlantean setting in general. I was thinking, I have no idea what's going on. I don't know what, and it's not doing me any favors either. It's like, okay, he clearly has some kind of relationship with this person. There's a person on a throne that seems to be either sleeping underwater or dead. But we'll see what happens next, December, whenever the movie comes out. But I also kept thinking that movie's going to be complicated. That's what I think it's like, it's all underwater. This seems like
the same thing after that action sequence. I was like, man, how do you do a whole movie of this?
I had to.
It's not stepping down after Furious 7. He's like, I'm going to make it even harder on myself. I'm going to have a whole movie on water.
Brian, what did you think of the Aquaman stuff? What were you like? I was thinking of you actually, Brian, because I was like, is Brian going to be just like lost at sea, if you will? Yeah, thank you.
No, I tracked. My feelings were I thought he fit into this movie well, and I enjoyed him as another personality for them all to bounce off of, but it didn't set me on fire for his solo movie.
Okay.
I thought he was a good spice in the stew.
Sure. See,
he gets one of the best scenes in the movie where he's sitting, you learn that he's sitting on Wonder Woman's lasso, but he has this whole monologue. Yeah, it's pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
You know what was great about that for me is I genuinely didn't know why he was opening up.
Same. Right? It totally got me. It was very well set up.
It was very fun. Yeah, see, I'm a fan of the Aquaman character. I read the comic book in the 90s when they had sort of, revamped him with the long hair and the beard and the bare chest. Like, that's a specific era of Aquaman. So I love the fact that when they made him a movie character, that's the version that they went back to. Because I'm like, that's my Aquaman.
Right, right.
I appreciated that. And I like that they cast a non-white actor to play him because, why not? Because I know people are like, Aquaman's supposed to be white. I'm like, he's a fish person. Like, whatever.
When Bruce Wayne, he's like, it was one of the scenes where I'm like, I'm two steps ahead of the joke, and so I was already laughing. But when Bruce Wayne like asks Aquaman to put word out to the fish, right. he doesn't get Aquaman. He's like, I guess he talks to fish, so I should probably tell him to like right. get a message right. out in the water to see what's going on. And he like has to bridge this topic with Aquaman. It's really, it's just really funny.
It's a very funny way of hanging a lampshade on the cliche of Aquaman,
mm-hmm.
which is like, if they have a mission in the Sahara, right? It's always like, okay, Superman, you do this. Wonder Woman, you do that. Aquaman, you answer the phones.
If there's an oasis, we'll drop you off there and we'll see you later.
We'll see you in a bit,
You can throw some coconuts at us. There are coconuts at Oasis, guy. I don't know if you knew this. I saw that on one of those science shows.
It's good to know.
Yeah, that's a fact. You don't need to look it up. You can just trust me right there.
There was one more after credit scene, and this was pretty clearly setting up.
You talk about Cyborg. We can't leave out Cyborg.
You're right. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So Ray Fisher is the second person to play Cyborg in live action because the first time we ever saw Cyborg was on Smallville.
Mm.
And it was the famous Jet Jackson. I don't know the actor's name. He committed suicide recently.
Yeah, that's what I immediately realized as you said that. I was like, that's right. That's the actor that killed himself, and it's really sad.
So he was the first Cyborg. So I don't know why I bring that up, but I really like. I've never seen Ray Fisher in anything. I'm actually not that familiar with him. But
he's a theater guy. So
He had some presence in this.
I agree.
For being hidden behind all that stuff.
Yeah, I going in, I'm like, I don't know what this is going to be. It just looked like I'm, you know, kind of a CG mess. But in context, I think it actually works well. And not only does it work well, visually, it's not hit or miss, but, you know, compared to the others that are less complicated, there's a lot going on with this guy.
Yes.
But as far as what Ray Fisher's doing, I like the scenes he has with other people, too, because I think he helps bring out what those characters need to be have brought out of them. It works to kind of, because he doesn't understand himself. He's getting less human physically, but trying to hold on to the sense of, like, is he his own humanity, as well as, you know, the inherent heroism that he can bring if he chooses to. And the interaction he has with those other characters, I think, helps emphasize that. Like, it's a good pivot point for the other characters to work with. So I was more impressed than I expected to be by Cyborg, which I was like, okay, that's also a thing. But coming out of it, it's like, okay, all right, let's see where Cyborg does.
I totally agree. And I'm somebody who, like, I'm old school enough where I'm like, Cyborg is part of the Titans. And that's he should stay with the Titans. That's how it's supposed to be. I'm like old man Hassan. So, you know, of course, Cyborg has been part of the Justice League now for, I don't even know how long now. At least since the New 52. So I should get over it. But my point is that I was down with it. I really liked the relationship between him and Flash. You know, I feel like they're kind of the entry-level characters to some extent. Mm. Where they're entering this world of these sort of larger than life characters. So I liked it. I bought it.
Mm-hmm. He works in a way. Like, that was a surprise for me, where it's like, okay, it's not just like the other guy that's also here. It's like, this is a character that matters, to the thing. Like, it's maybe the most straight laced of the characters. He's like, I guess, the Captain America of this group almost, as far as what he's could be doing. But it's like, he works. It's the kind of part that you really do need to make an ensemble like this have all of the different pieces it needs to get together. Like, he's a essential stone, and his name is Victor Stone.
And oh, that's nice. I also like the stunt casting of having Joe Morton as his father. That's just very clever.
I like the scene where they all walk in on Joe Morton and he's holding up the mother box and he's like, I don't know how much longer I can hold this.
Well, what'd you guys think of the second after credits sequence? This is where we find out that Lex Luthor has escaped from prison. And look, there's Joe Manganiello made to look like an old man as Deathstroke.
He looked like Solid Snake in Metal Gear Solid.
He did.
Snake.
Old Snake.
I will say I liked we've talked about this on Facebook. Like Jesse Eisenberg's Lex Luthor interpretation. I thought it was something unique and different. Obviously, they're both the same. Regardless, it was a new approach to Luthor that I enjoyed, and I kind of got the idea they were going for. And I thought Eisenberg, he did the Eisenberg thing, which is obviously why he was hired. And so seeing him back and being in like full maniacal mode, I'm like, yes, give me this now. I want to see the Injustice League going on against the Justice League if that's what they're going for. Like, this looks fun.
To me, I was just disappointed that Lex didn't start feeding Jolly Ranchers to Deathstroke. I'm like, Ranchers, no sale. That was me.
You mentioned that, and that's kind of and not specifically Jolly Ranchers, but that's the kind of stuff that I think is missing from this film and why I don't think it's registering to me more. Mm-hmm. I think taking out a lot of the Snyder stuff, in addition to getting rid of the kind of the grimness and the dark atmosphere and whatnot, you kind of got rid of a lot of the weird stuff too that makes it memorable. Mm. You have like the things like the Granny's peach tea, and it's like, that's weird, but it's also like, I'm not complaining about Granny's peach tea. I'm complaining about other stuff in that movie. That's the stuff that I like. And this movie, it doesn't have much of that. Like, it has some good one-on-one and conversation scenes, because that's what Whedon does. Like, he's good at that thing, but it misses on the kind of little weird stuff that are also a part of the Zack Snyder films. Like, I was missing more of those quirky bits and whatnot. Like, it's so to the point, which is why it's 2 hours. It's so just like, we need to get together. We're together now. Let's go fight people. Like, that's it. That's the whole movie. It's streamlined. And it's like, okay, but like, I miss the stuff. I miss the you know, the goo that was in between some of these scenes.
Mm. Well, I can see. I mean, yeah, when you have so many characters to service in that time.
And it sure feels like that was the edict from on high. Look, get this sucker done in under two hours. I agree with what you're saying, Aaron, where even if we're not talking about Snyder specifically, but sort of just the little, you know, the little ends of scenes and things like that, that just are bits of character business that add sort of texture to the film. This is not that. And I'm curious if what the version that makes it to home video will... if there will be any kind of an expanded cut, or if something like that can even exist, because it sure feels like it's a patchwork Frankenstein monster of a movie, you know?
Yeah, which is why I don't necessarily expect there to be kind of an extended cut compared to the other, Suicide Squad and Batman Superman.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, like those both had extended versions, which are more or less, I don't know, I don't need to watch Super Suicide Squad ever again, but Batman Superman, that was the movie that Snyder submitted. That was like his finished version. So it's like, this is different, yeah, because you have these giant reshoots or whatnot. It feels like it's going to be something like Rogue One, which is another great example, by the way, of why you don't need to adjust a, you know, grade on a curve. That movie works, at least for me, works just fine.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
It has very notable problems behind the set, and, you know, they made it work for him. But, you know, Disney's never going to give you that other version of Rogue One, which, like, I don't think Warner Brothers is going to be inclined to show you a version that they basically didn't like the first time around.
Unless they do like what they did with Exorcist, remember, where they did like a Paul Schrader cut.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Paul Schrader, right?
Yeah. Hold on.
It was like Rennie Harlan did the first.
The reshot version. That's right. Another weird one where like they shot the entire movie again.
That's crazy. Yeah. Yeah. I haven't seen. I only saw the Rennie Harlan one, and that was enough.
That masterpiece that we all remember and love.
Right. Exactly.
Stellan Skarsgård's best. That's what we call it.
he's good in it, but. But
he's Stellan Skarsgård. He's bringing his all. He brought his all to Thor: The Dark World.
That's true. So, Brian, any thoughts from you as far as Justice League as we sort of wind the conversation down?
No, just that. Yeah, I was surprised to walk out and have had such a good time with it. It's you know, this isn't a film. This is a flick, right?
I like it. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot that you could, if you really want to sit down, and I think anyone who walks out of this movie and doesn't like it is totally...
Oh.
No, I was going to say, they're totally entitled to it, but like I think it's just what you bring into it.
They're entitled to being a bad person. That's on them.
No, I went in with very low expectations, and I watched a very simple movie that just wanted to have some fun, and I walked out having fun.
There you go. Aaron?
I mean, I'll say this because I haven't mentioned this thing. I think part of another reason why it's not sitting so high is because it's not the first time we've seen this. This is the second, you know,
this is another version of Avengers.
It's even just like kind of a team up film of superheroes in general. I mean, we've had multiple versions of that in the Marvelverse, which I'm trying not to speak of too much because I don't really want to compare it because there's no reason to, but. At the, you know, in the current environment we're in, we're getting lots of superhero movies, which some people believe to be 100 based off how they talk about fatigue, where it's like, okay, this is just the fifth one this year, but, you know, there's hundreds of movies every year. You can get over it. But no one's complaining about there's no rom-com fatigue, and we get one of those like every month, so it's whatever. But it doesn't feel like it's a jumping off point to get more movies of this type because we've had so many of them already. So it feels less special. Mm. And that brings it down for me, honestly. Like I want to go into, I love Batman and I love the DC universe. I love comic books in general, but I love the DC universe. And it's like, yeah, you're going to make a Justice League movie. Give me a Justice League movie. And this one, it gives me that. It just feels more or less like it's checked off the basic points on the chart here to get you an idea of what this could be, but it doesn't really go any further than that, which is a shame. I think there's room to make a more ambitious Justice League movie, and reviewing a film like this, it shouldn't make me say, you know, next time they're going to hit it out of the park. I'd ideally want to say they hit it out of the park this time. So it's fun. It'll make its money, I'm sure. It'll be enjoyable for the fans that really want to embrace this and people that are more or less entertained by big, big, splashy, colorful action movies will enjoy this. But there's room for improvement. I mean, there's room there. Like the cast is great. They're doing their job, but you know, it only goes so far as being a memorable superhero movie in a world that's full of more superhero movies that are somewhat.
This is number 7 this year, I think, or number 6, however many superhero movies there have been, which is kind
including Underpants. Let's not forget that one.
So. Okay. So that would, let's see, since the beginning of the year, we've had Logan and,
Guardians.
Which one?
Guardians, yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy, Wonder Woman. What am I missing?
Captain Underpants. Spider-Man,
that's right.
The Lego Batman movie.
The Lego Batman. Okay, so I mean, really, it's kind of amazing when you think about it that the sheer volume. I don't think there's ever been a year with this many superhero flicks in it. And I mean, on balance, none of them was a catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get Fantastic Four, you know, 2015 this year.
Yeah, some would say this is the exception. but
Aaron, even you would agree that it has its problems, but it's not terrible.
No, it's not, and I'm not trying to base it off the holier than holy Rotten Tomato score. But it's like,
which surprised me, to be honest, at the fact it landed in the 40s.
Yeah, it's low. It's 36 currently. It's like, oh wow. It's like, really?
That,
like,
I don't think like, it's. That doesn't make any sense to me, honestly.
I mean, we don't need to talk too much about, you know, numbers that don't mean a thing.
Right.
And the average rating, by the way, is 5.2. So it's like, it's decidedly mixed, it would seem. But at the same time, it's like, really? It does seem to get across the sense of fun that you want to have in this sort of movie. I don't know why the...
I'm not understanding that. It's not.
I don't know where the majority of critics are coming down and saying, you know what, this is nothing. It's like, all right, it's not the best. But at the same time, I think you can arguably see why it's better than some of the other entries in this universe.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think our sort of collective judgment is it's a fun time. There's definitely room to grow. But I hope there will be a chance to grow. I mean, I know, like we mentioned earlier, that Ben Affleck is sort of, you know, it's sure looking like he's not going to be back. And I personally... I'll be disappointed if that's the case because I do like him in this role and I'd love to see him do at least one or two more.
Do you think he's like Daniel Craig in it, or it's just he's just tired? Like, and I reference that as far as like James Bond.
Yeah, right.
Where after Spectre, where it's like he had just finished filming that massive movie and doing an ad campaign, which required doing like stupid Heineken commercials and all that. So when you're in an interview being asked about the next James Bond movie, right. It's like, yeah, I'm not going to be like super happy to do James Bond right away again.
I'd rather slice my wrists open or something.
Yeah. And then, you know, 2 years later, now he's like, yeah, I want to be James Bond. Right. I got to be with my, you know, family and take a break from being in the biggest movie of the world at that time. Yeah, now I'm happy. So it's like Affleck's coming off a year where it's only been a year since we're, you know, a year and a half since Batman v Superman. I'm sure he's probably happy to take a break now as opposed to talking about the next Batman movie.
That's so true. Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe give it time. I mean, it sure seems like whatever Matt Reeves ends up doing with his trilogy is not... I mean, they're saying Jake Gyllenhaal, I guess, is his choice. What they're saying is that the Reeves trilogy is going to be basically detached from the DC expanded universe. So I don't know what's going on.
I mean, it's... We can also remember Ben Affleck's not exactly had the best year. Between his movie, Live by Night, that failed.
Yeah.
And
it various, died by night, too. Yeah.
Yeah. And various personal issues that have come up recently. It's like, yeah, I don't think the dude's in the position to be like, put me back in the cowl right away, please. I need millions of people to continue asking me about Batman. Like, maybe I want to get back with the wife that I'm trying to reconcile with and the children that I have. Maybe I want to do that first before I figure out whether or not I'm going to wear a cape and cowl to entertain other people around the world.
Yeah, everybody, just cut him some slack, all right? Jeez, how do you like them apples? well, with that, that's a good place to leave this discussion. So, from my end, I'm far more optimistic about the future of the DC Expanded Universe than I was before, well, before Wonder Woman came out, to be fair. To me, this continues the upswing that we saw with Wonder Woman, and I hope that that upswing will continue next year with Aquaman, but we shall see. The conversation will continue here and on Aaron's show, of course.
With yeah, you guys got a exclusive because I haven't talked about this yet with Abe.
Yeah, we beat you to it. Yeah, so that should be interesting. Well, while we're talking about your show, Aaron, can you tell people where they can listen to that and where they can find your reviews?
Oh, sure. You can find the podcast that I co-host with my friend Abe, Out Now with Aaron and Abe, on iTunes as well as on Audioboom. It is a weekly film review show where we talk about the latest new releases. We also have lots of bonus episodes. We do a lot of commentary tracks, much like the Movie Film Podcast does. We also have lots of fun bonus conversations. We've had like a lot because we recently had our 300th episode.
So it's like,
congrats.
I know. I don't know.
Yeah, Brian, how does that make you feel, huh?
If you stuck with it, people listen, it's fine. But like we did that, and then we had like October where we do all these bonus horror episodes. So it's like been basically become a bi-weekly show since September because we've had all this bonus content recently. So it's been a lot of fun, but, you know, tiring. But yeah, that's all there. Out Now with Aaron and Abe. It's a fun show. We like doing it. And you can find me writing over in a number of places, but I'll direct you to my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com. I pretty much collect everything and put it right there. And I'm on Twitter at Aaron's PS4.
There we go. Brian, what do you want to hype up for the audience?
Well, I currently write for a show called Puppy Dog Pals, which is on Disney and Disney Junior. And so if you have young kids or you like puppy dogs going on adventures around the world, I say check it out. I think you'll like it.
That sounds fantastic. I do want to check this out immediately.
I have to tell you, my four-year-old friggin' loves that show. Like, he sings the song.
Really?
He's a fanboy of that show.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, it's a fun show. It's a fun show.
I know that you've had some cool guest actors come in and do voiceover work for future episodes, which, you know, that's just exciting to me that you get to interact with these cool people.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I guess I can't really bring them up. But, yeah, there's fanboy out about some of this stuff.
It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
As for me, you can find me at my website, zakiscorner.com. That's Z-A-K-I-S corner. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at Zachy's Corner, same thing. And I'm also at the Huffington Post, where my movie reviews go up regularly, as does this show, as does the Nostalgia Theater Show. Nostalgia Theater Show coming up next week, featuring my interview with Eric and Julia Leewald. They were the producers of the 1992 X-Men animated series, celebrating its 25th anniversary this year, and we had a great conversation about the making of that show. So that's a fun one I'm looking forward to sharing. We'll be back in just a few weeks with a brand new episode. We'll also have a commentary track, hopefully dropping soon. I'm not going to say what that is because every time I announce it, we keep screwing ourselves over. So. Yeah. But it's going to be friggin' awesome. And then and coming soon, we have our Phantom Menace commentary track just before our Last Jedi episode. So lots of fun movie film stuff coming up in the next few weeks. And with that, on behalf of our guest, Aaron Neuwirth, and on behalf of my partner, Brian Hall, my name is Zaki Hassan. This has been Movie Film 135. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next time.
My man.
Nice. Welcome, friends. It's the Movie Film Podcast. Podcast, enjoy the show. Zaki and Brian are talking about the movies. Movie Film Podcast on the radio.